Produced by PI Media.
Phishing campaigns have been the lowest form of cyber attack. They're like the gas station robberies of cybercrime. That's why we have to ask questions when a phishing campaign doesn't turn out so simple. On today's episode, we're asking, how can a lowly spear phishing campaign cause real damage to real businesses while evading law enforcement for years? It was 2:36 a.m. on Thursday, November 14th, 2019, when the information systems at Virgo Bank's Amsterdam headquarters first contracted the malware now known as Trojan.Bancor. By the time employees entered the premises for the Friday morning work hours, the damage had been done. $8 million siphoned straight from the source. Following the Virgo breach, news stories were left with many unanswered questions. Foremost among those questions was, of course, what powerful, possibly state-level actor could have pulled off such an attack against a multinational, highly guarded banking institution? Was it the Russians? The Chinese? The Americans? Investigators analyzed the network traffic from that night, and the conclusion they came to astounded everybody. The hackers were none other than Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr. Okay, be honest. You believed me for a second there, didn't you? Hi, I'm Ran Levy. Welcome back to Checkpoint Research Podcast. Typically on this show, I don't make up facts and stories. Today I did to prove a point. People instinctively trust one another. You weren't aware of this story and you'd never heard of Virgo Bank before, but your brain made a subconscious conclusion that the likelihood that I was making up a fake hacking story was far lower than the likelihood that you simply missed a news story and didn't know about some Dutch bank. And you know what? Your logic was correct. In any other scenario, you're more likely to learn something new on this show than be tricked into believing something false. Now, let's talk about phishing emails. Each of us probably thinks, I'm savvy. I've been around the block. You can't trick me with some generic spam email. But is that true? Sure, there are some spam emails that are easy enough to spot. Oftentimes, spam emails, like those Nigerian prince scams, are designed to be easy to spot. The cyber criminals sending them out don't want to deal with thousands of responses, so they single out the most gullible targets by creating obviously fake stories. Lots of scam emails are very difficult to identify, though, even by the best of us. They're easy to fall for because they're so detailed. Part of why you believed my fake story about Virgo Bank is because I included such minute details as the date and time and the name of the malware used in the attack. Another reason why you might have believed me is because we're sponsored by Checkpoint. They're a well-known, reputable brand. Now, imagine you're a customer of the Royal Bank of Canada, the largest bank in Canada, and you get the following email.
Attention! Reissue user digital certificate registration code. Your enrollment digital certificate renewal in RBC Express, trademark, is in progress. To complete the enrollment process and activate your digital certificate, you will need your authorization code. You can complete your enrollment renewal in RBC Express. Copy and paste the authorization code above and click the link below to start the process. If you have any questions, please contact us here, RBC Express Client Support Center. Thank you, RBC Royal Bank.
The email has RBC's logo at the top. When you follow the link, you reach a page that appears exactly as you know the RBC website to look. Do you enter your info? Well, of course, you're listening to a podcast about cybersecurity, so you probably know where we're going with this. But if this kind of email arrived from your bank in your inbox at some early hour of the morning, would you really think twice about it? I can't say for sure that I would. It's probably why the phishing campaign was so successful for so long.
Hi, my name is Tohar Bar-On. I am a malware analyst at the Threat Intelligence Analysis Team in Checkpoint.
The Checkpoint research team wasn't necessarily hunting for Canadian phishing emails when they came upon them. It was more like they were commanding a submarine in the Pacific and an unidentified ship entered their radar.
It began like almost any research. We look at our telemetry that comes from all the gateways we have around the world. And we saw an unusual spike in activity in emails. We looked at what those emails actually include, where are they coming from, who are they targeting, who are they being sent to. And we saw something that doesn't usually pop up in our usual day-to-day. Usually what we see is malicious documents delivering all sorts of viruses, but this time we saw a phishing attack that was targeting Canadian companies.
This phishing campaign didn't actually target ordinary Canadian citizens. It targeted companies, higher value targets with bigger bank accounts through their employees. An email like the one I just read to you might be sent to, say, somebody in the human resources department. Now, there are a few reasons you can imagine for why this scam would work. First of all, as we just established, an official-looking email from an official-looking source isn't always easy to spot if you're not otherwise looking for it. This is especially true for the kinds of people receiving these emails in particular. Receptionists, HR representatives, HR reps, folks who open dozens, even hundreds of emails a day as part of their jobs. Imagine just how little scrutiny you'd apply in that situation. Nobody is that disciplined. You're going to click the link, and I don't care who you are. Second of all, the hackers had some knowledge of whom they were dealing with.
They weren't tailor-made for each and every victim, but we do think that the actors had prior knowledge of who is a customer of Royal Bank of Canada. So the PDF and the document was very custom-made to look like the Royal Bank of Canada. What we often see in phishing emails is some sort of grammar mistakes or some sort of weird phrasing, which we didn't see in this case.
A third factor the hacker used to their advantage was the means by which they delivered their malicious link. They didn't include the link itself in the body of the email. Rather, they put it in an attached PDF document. Why?
Well, there's two reasons. One reason is to evade the systems that only scan the email itself. Not all systems scan the attachments inside the email. So if you were to simply include the link inside the email body, many systems would just detect that and block the email. Another reason is what we saw in some waves of the campaign. So there were different waves in which the emails were sent. In some of the cases, the PDF document had a password included inside the email, which the user needed to enter when opening the PDF document. Again, not a lot of systems know how to deal with encoded or encrypted documents.
There was one more crucial step which made this attack more advanced than most. Two-factor authentication is one of the most powerful tools we have to protect our accounts. Even security professionals will advise you to turn on two-factor authentication wherever possible, because it's such an easy, effective way to prevent your accounts from getting hacked. That's because even if a cyber criminal breaks into your computer or obtains your login information, they'll need to break into your phone too and obtain the temporary one-time code sent there. It's nearly impossible to pull off. The Royal Bank of Canada, as most banks do, and all banks should do, required two-factor authentication for logins.
Now, that is the most sophisticated part of this attack, because usually we learn that two-factor authentication is what helps us keep our accounts safe. But in this case, they were phishing also for this two-factor authentication in order to bypass it and gain access to your account.
But how could a hacker possibly break two-factor authentication? Cracking somebody's laptop and phone at the same time would seem impossibly difficult. Except these hackers had a clever solution that allowed them to cheat the system and get around the problem of hacking into both devices at once.
They were simply asking the user to enter it. Now, a two-factor authentication code is valid for only 1 minute, so they would have a very small time window in which to access that account.
A victim accesses a mock webpage and enters their account information. The hackers receive the information and log in to the bank's real webpage. The real webpage sends an authentication code to the victim, who then enters it into the fake webpage. The code goes straight to the hackers, who enter it into the real webpage. Genius! It almost makes you wonder why more hackers don't use this same trick.
On the one hand, yes, that is a very simple way. On the other hand, we don't see it often in phishing campaigns. The automation required to gain that two-factor authentication code and then insert it into the real bank's systems in almost real time, that is a skill that most phishing actors don't really have.
As the Checkpoint team dove deeper into their research, they discovered not only the characteristics that made this phishing campaign effective, but the little hints that actually they hadn't stumbled on anything new. These hackers had been around for years.
That's right. We found an attack that was very similar, again targeting Canadian banks and their customers, their business customers, which happened 2 years ago in 2017. There were several similarities, again, in the phrasing. The phrasing that was used inside the documents was very similar. The methods used to phish the credentials was, again, very similar. And as we dove deeper into both our campaign and the one in 2017, we began to see more and more similarities, which eventually led us to believe that it was being carried out by the same actor. We found out that they were using the same infrastructure of servers, essentially.
The phishing emails from 2017 targeted all kinds of institutions: TD Bank, American Express, Wells Fargo, 14 in total. It didn't take rocket science to figure out that these campaigns were connected. The fake RBC emails and the fake TD Bank emails, for example, looked nearly identical, with only the bank's name and logo changed. This was the cybercrime equivalent of sending the same application essay to multiple colleges and just cut-pasting the name of each one as you go. Clearly, not every aspect of this operation was so sophisticated. In fact, for as clever as their solution to two-factor authentication was, in other aspects of the attack, these hackers took obvious shortcuts. For example, their replica bank websites were not actually fully coded web pages. Rather, they were simply screenshots with invisible text boxes placed on top of where the input fields were on the real site. It was a mirage, like a movie set, or those things at the beach and at carnivals where you stick your head into a hole and it looks like you're a bodybuilder. The Canada phishing hackers also made errors that, looking back, should seem glaringly obvious. We know that lots of work was put into the emails to make them look legit, but actually, I glossed over what totally gave them away. If you were to examine the fake TB Bank email from 2017, you might notice something. The word enrollment is spelled incorrectly, with only one L. In fact, it's spelled incorrectly multiple times in the document. If you think this is bad, consider 2 years later, in the fake RBC emails, the hackers made the same typo. Even with 2 years' time, they didn't bother to fix it. And these are the people who went undetected by the entire security world? Why did it take years for anybody to catch on?
So, what we believe happened is the reason we caught this campaign, right, was because we saw a spike in our telemetry. What we believe happened that is for a long time, they would send out low volume of emails, try to fish out maybe a couple victims a day, something like that.
To build on what Tohar is saying, it's not that nobody could have picked up on this phishing campaign earlier. Being a cybersecurity professional is kind of like being a fireman. You're constantly running around, putting out fires in all kinds of places as they arise. Because malicious activity is happening all around the world at great volume every day, response teams rarely run out of things to do. A small enough malicious campaign might just fly under the radar if it's not as important as 100 other bigger fires burning in other places at the same time. Recall how Checkpoint first became aware of this phishing campaign. They saw a spike in activity in Canada. Had the hackers behind that spike simply kept their attacks at low volume, this podcast episode probably wouldn't exist.
Exactly. When you trickle your campaign, you fade into the background noise of the internet. Obviously, the internet has tons of traffic going through it every day. And if you're just a very small fraction of that traffic, then it's very easy to just get lost in there. And so nobody would notice you.
For all that was uncovered, there remains an equal number of unanswered questions surrounding these Canadian phishing hacks. For example, why was Canada in particular targeted? And how much damage was done?
So unfortunately, we don't know much about the damages that were caused by these attacks. The victims are naturally not very keen to divulge that information. If they were hit, they're not readily admitting that they were hit and for how much. And the banks that were, well, actually, they were frauded, basically. They're also not really willing to admit that. So our information is very restricted, let's say.
We also have precious little information as to the identity of the hackers behind these attacks.
Right. What we know about the infrastructure is that it is a server farm in Ukraine. We know that the attacker used a very specific range of IP addresses of a hosting company in Ukraine. They were hosting several domains there. What we could see in regards of similarity between our attack and the one from 2017, they were actually using, some of the domains that were registered to impersonate Canadian banks were registered under the same fake IDs or fake names and fake emails that were used in the 2017 attack.
We're talking about the Hui's information.
Exactly.
The domains.
Yeah.
And we're talking about an infrastructure that is located in the Ukraine, mm-hmm. But does that mean that the attackers themselves are Ukrainians?
Not necessarily, no.
They could be from anywhere. Did you try to contact the ISP or the host of these servers Did you have any success?
We did not have any success in that, no, unfortunately.
So what? This is a kind of a bulletproof hosting, probably? They ignore any reports of abuse, do you think, or...?
They don't advertise themselves as bulletproof hosting, but they do seem to be very lenient towards illegitimate or, let's say...
borderline activity, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ultimately, the particular perpetrators of this phishing campaigns are probably not that important to us. What matters is what we can learn from this story to try and defend against the next phishing campaign to come around. So, if we could offer advice to people who could be victims of such future attacks, based on what you learned from that attack, what can we help them with?
Never click any links in your email. No, I'm kidding. But you do have to double check what you click on. If you see something that maybe you weren't expecting, such as renew your certificate, it's a better idea to enter into the bank's website by yourself and initiate that process by yourself. And
you mean not click on the link inside the email, but actually go to the browser, enter the URL, or Google the bank's name, and enter the login page from there.
Where possible, definitely, yeah. But you can also, in many cases, inspect the URL that you are clicking and make sure that it goes to the real website. We did see, in several of the cases, very convincing impersonations of the website, such as we saw royalbc.com, which one would think is the Royal Bank of Canada, but that is not the official URL or domain for the Royal Bank of Canada. So you really need to double check.
It's a lesson learned. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.